Jono.
Welcome back to another episode of SITM Podcast. I'm your host, Uncle AK, back at it again, you know what I mean? Today, I called one of my good guys, man, Brian, to, you know, sit down with me and talk about Bitcoin. You know what I mean? A lot of people, we've been hearing a lot of news about Bitcoin, some people getting arrested. I don't know if it's Dogecoin or Bitcoin. Maybe. Anyways, we're going to get into it, you know what I mean? But I got Brian here to discuss Bitcoin. Why? Because he do instruct people on Bitcoin, not just here in the diaspora, but, you know, in Africa as well. You know what I mean? Like, his reach is really, 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 really out there. So with no further ado, man. Hey, Brian, man, welcome to the show, man. Who is Brian? Those who are
watching. Thanks a lot. Thanks, AK. First, I would like to say thank you again, because you like taught me a lot about the digital space, especially information management and dissemination and the whole infrastructure to set that up. So I'm a computer enthusiast, a programmer journeyman. I love learning about technologies and using them to solve my own problems. I think that's who I am. The rest is in the details.
Yeah, so hey, how did you get into Bitcoin? And for those who are watching, right, I have this question as last, but Bitcoin and crypto, right? What's the difference between Bitcoin and crypto before we get lost into the weeds of this conversation?
Yeah, so Bitcoin is like a particular technology that actually let humans and the rest know that they could use cryptography to store information and value, and also manage access to that, just like you'd have doors in your house and things like that. And then after that, lots of people learned that technology, Bitcoin, and then maybe saw some issues with it and started making modifications. So lots of other coins started spinning off Bitcoin's invention. And those are generally classified as crypto. But they have similar, it's like you create a car and maybe you create Mercedes or something, and then others start learning it and creating Toyota, all of those, but they call them cars. Gotcha. You see what I mean? And then they would not say Mercedes, and then there's cars.
Right.
See what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. How would you describe Bitcoin to a 5-year-old, man, for them to understand? Like, if you had to like describe Bitcoin to a 5-year-old. Because I still don't understand what it is. So this is me trying to get into it. Like, to a 5-year-old, how would you describe Bitcoin?
Yeah, so Bitcoin is like money for and on the internet, which also doubles as the internet of money. So in the physical world, we have money, which is like this token or an asset or some object that we use to measure value, to exchange that value, to store the value, and many other aspects to it. But if you noticed on the internet or in the digital space, we didn't really have that kind of thing. So normally we have banking infrastructure that we maybe give you an application where you could see a bank balance, but you can't take that number. Let's say if you have $100 in your Bank of America, you can take it yourself and keep it like in a folder in your computer. You see what I mean? You must log into the bank account in order to use it, of which there are just numbers that go up and down depending on your transactions, right? Mm-hmm. So now, similarly, before the internet and computers, we had physical files, which we kept in papers. Think of your first school leaving certificate. Think of like any other file you've had. When we moved to computers and to the internet, you now have files on your computer. Like this session we're having, you would finally have it as a file, right? Which like mimics most of the properties that physical files or the tape devices or other mechanisms that came before it. So Bitcoin does that for money. It creates a store value, a unit of account, a medium of exchange, and all of those functionalities that we're used to in the physical world with money, it creates that in the digital space and on the internet. So that's why I would say it's like the internet of money or money for the internet. Just to summarize, it's much more than that.
How did you become a BCom instructor, and why are you so passionate about it?
So thanks to the question. So I actually started learning about Bitcoin, both the technology and how to use it, and I started seeing the changes it was bringing to my life. Same as somebody can learn how to use WhatsApp, right? Most of us who like show our friends WhatsApp, maybe set up accounts for our parents, our cousins, even Facebook, right? You've gone through that. Twitter, we always have this time, so we go discover it. Then you have a friend that is not on it and you tell them, that there's that network effect, right? So similarly, I went through the same thing with Bitcoin, but I came and realized that it's kind of intimidating to many people. And especially because from your first question, you asked me crypto, Bitcoin, there's a lot of haze. It's not clear what it is, the space and things like that. So a lot of people get intimidated. So I was motivated by such to simplify to people. But the most important thing is, we're living in a world now where there's a lot of censorship and there's a lot of hardship. So there are many people who are hustlers. They have ideas that they would like to execute, but there are so many blocks between them and the execution of that dream. One of them is payments. So let's say you as a media guru, you may be organizing conferences or podcast episodes that you want to sell, like worldwide. You would have a very difficult time trying to receive payments in exchange for the information you're delivering. If you're dealing with Cameroon, how do they start paying you here in the US, in Nigeria, people from China, people from Tibet, people from Japan, and things like that. So the infrastructure is lacking in most places. But with Bitcoin, it's just one coin. There are no boundaries. So wherever you are on earth, so long as maybe you have an internet connection and you have an application that serves, that receives and exchanges Bitcoin and understands the network, then you can operate with it. So now, in trying to do business in Cameroon, I came to the point where there are many people with ideas, I myself, but would be stuck at payments. And then there are many people who are very productive, but maybe Facebook blocks their page or blocks their account. You see someone who has gone up to hundreds of thousands. Let's see 200,000 followers on Facebook, and then something happens, they're kicked out. Or maybe they're on Facebook and they've given them stars and things like that. They want to get it back, but their processes, that's where you start seeing some clauses that were in very fine print that, you know, will prevent you from claiming your stars. So all of those things, you see that between you and your dream, there's so many things between it, mostly black holes just absorbing the value. So I was like, this technology called Bitcoin, it takes away the middleman. It gives you direct access to your assets and your property and your information and your value. And all the management, all the security detail, all the infrastructure cementing its functionality is encrypted in, or it's captured and expressed using mathematics, physics, cryptography in a way that you don't need a middleman. So I thought I should try to instruct people on this so that they should be independent and have their own sovereignty, because summarily, we are in the information age, and they always say information is power, information is gold, and things like that. Mm. So we should be able to monetize our content or capture the value in our content and manage it ourselves without others absorbing it from us and increasing the poverty that is seen in the world. So that's why I started like trying to expose people to this technology.
Yeah, man. So far, how would you rate your very first class? I mean, like, you know, people joining it, be it whether they want to use that for financial or, you know, just for informational purposes. How would you rate that first one? And are you looking forward to the second one? Would you have a second session?
Yes, I will. So the first one, I'm kind of glad. One thing I love, especially in the physical world, is like telling someone something and then seeing their eyes like glow because they've realized something. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And so in that first class, I like realized it because another thing is we know as human beings, there are cultures that say that we know everything because God, we're in the image of God. So we know everything, but we need to extract it. So that's why you notice that even if I start describing Bitcoin from certain angles, then you figure out what it is. That's because you know it already. So you just have to find the path to it in your soul. You see, so that first class we had, this first class, we're having a lot of that experience where people are beginning to realize, oh, it's this thing. Oh, is that thing? So I really like it, and I hope to continue having such sessions.
That's what's up, man. What's the currency exchange current? Let's say, for example, if I have a dollar or $10, like how can I convert that to crypto?
Okay, let me check it. So mostly, I mostly do Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
Bitcoin now on Cash App. One Bitcoin is equivalent to $25,642.44. And if you want to exchange it, Cash App is one of the easiest ways to go about it. There is Coinbase, there are others, but I mostly go with Cash App because they have like low fees. Their fees are like low. And then the leadership of Cash App, they really understand the value of like Bitcoin. So their mission to like expose it to people, they have very little things on the way to prevent you from really harvesting the power in the technology.
What are some things that you use Bitcoin for?
Store value. Like, you know, before COVID or as we're growing, we start realizing that responsibilities are shifting. Let's say when you're in primary school, you mostly just go to school, right? Come and food is given to you. You're even cleaned up and things. You go to secondary school, maybe you start doing it a little by yourself. University, much more, but your parents still give you like money. And then you start working. And then you start seeing things changing.
Yeah.
See what I mean? You have to pay bills. You have to do so many things. You have to start learning how to save and things like that. You save in the bank and money is just there looking at you, and then they charge you fees for maintaining it. They're taking your money and charging you again on top, and all of those kinds of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
But since Bitcoin is store value, I can just keep money there, and it's secure. No one can hack it so long as they don't have that's the password to the system. You see what I mean? So I use Bitcoin as a store value. Also as a medium of exchange. I may want to send someone money to Cameroon. I don't need to go to the bank or Western Union, things like that. You have to provide your ID. Some kind of information where you're just exposing yourself. But like on Bitcoin, for example, it doesn't even need to know your name and stuff like that. It's just the cryptography secures you so long as you know a password, that's it. If any other person knows that password, they can access it. You see, so, and on my phone, if I have to send someone money to Cameroon, I just send it directly, like no extra activities.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are other people there that you can start trading with them because mark the keyword is a peer-to-peer network. So I could have a peer in Cameroon who would take Bitcoin and I give him like a Momo number and he will send the equivalent in France CFA to the person's Momo number. So that's one way I use Bitcoin. If I have family, friends in Cameroon to do business and the rest, I just send Bitcoin to maybe a peer who would do the exchange and send a number and you send it to them. Mm-hmm. And the way I use it is like just to learn about technologies. As I'm building as a programmer, I learned the Bitcoin system itself is very smart because like I said, it doesn't even need to know who you are. Just a password. So it's built on like proof-based mechanisms. If you're able to prove that you know you can solve this puzzle, then you pass. So if you look at how those are put together, it's actually very brilliant. So I learned a lot from that. When I study the Bitcoin code or systems on it, when I go to work myself, I implement some of those technologies. These are just a few. But I learn a lot and I use it like in such ways.
That's what's up, man. For our parents, you know what I mean, who I don't want to say struggle by lacking a little bit in technology, or, you know, the upcoming in technology. Let me use the, you know, upcoming.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. How, I mean, let's say in the next 5 years, right? How would they be able to adopt this? How would Bitcoin itself, you know, become something easier for them to use on a day-to-day, especially, you know, money transfer? You know, looking for that peer-to-peer thing, as you mentioned, how would that work? Like, who would they have as peer-to-peer, you know, being that, you know, they lack in technology?
Yeah, so there are many aspects to that. One of them is evolution. So can you remember, like, some technology, maybe, let me see, like, web browsers? Before Chrome came, maybe the browsers we used back in the day, just think maybe 2004, mm-hmm. 2005. Let's say 2003, Yahoo Messenger was the main communication portal. There was no WhatsApp and things like that. So if you would want to integrate your parents, you have to teach them how to use Yahoo. You need to join like chat room and things like that, right?
Right.
Eventually, people started making it simpler, building simpler interfaces, building simpler technologies around it, until we have things like WhatsApp and stuff. Secondly, again, around that period, we used to have phone lines. If you had your parents in different cities or relatives in other countries, you would go pay at the phone line stuff, sometimes $500 for 1 minute.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean?
Yep.
Just to discuss. But nowadays on WhatsApp, you make a call. So you see that before then, they used telephone lines, cables to connect the world. But with the VoIP, voice over IP, we're able to start exchanging voice information on the internet. You see what I mean? So similarly, as Bitcoin, as time is going, we'll be building simpler technologies. Don't be surprised if in future you'll be using Bank of America and maybe you're able to send money to Cameroon directly, but it's because it's built on top of the Bitcoin network.
Right.
So that's one thing. But to answer your question directly, for our parents and stuff, one thing one can do is just to tell them, learn the technology and try to teach them little by little. They would understand, because most of our parents know how to store value, maybe by keeping money under the mattress, because most of them know how bad banks are. If you start listening to them, maybe they know banks that are falling, the bank manager stole money and ran away from the country, so they use their junkie associations to save value, or they have gold. So they know all these things that Bitcoin has just come to like digitize it. So it may be simpler than we think. And added to that, you yourself can create wallets for them and start saving value in it. And when they're ready, you just give them the secret key. It's like creating an email for someone and just giving them the password.
Mm-hmm. If you store money in your Bitcoin, right, does it yield interest? Like most people store in their bank accounts and say they yield 2 point something or 3 point something or 4 point something annually?
Not in that sense. So it's a store of value, right? It captures value. So, but what happens is the way, since it's a network, if the value of Bitcoin increases, everyone on the network absorbs that value equally. So your bank will take your money and do business with it, but they will probably give you a fraction of the value they've harvested on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but with Bitcoin, so let's look at history so you see how this works. In 2010, $1 could buy about 1,024 Bitcoin. Because when they had created this network and they realized that that token, we can use it as money, but it didn't really have monetary value. So some people started doing trade with it. Before, they would just use it as gifts, or maybe they was playing Solitaire online and stuff. They use Bitcoin stuff. But as they started realizing the value and stuff like that, they began to express it in US dollar terms, right? Because one Bitcoin is always going to be one Bitcoin. But it's in terms of US dollar that, like, one Bitcoin back in the day $1 will buy 1024. The 13 years later, one Bitcoin is equal to about $26,000.
Yep.
Yeah, so it's increased like thousands of times. And when you look at it, what happens is as more people use it, the more the value in the system increases, because value is like I would say value is the sum total of the advantages of the usage of something, right? Like what makes someone appreciate something,
right?
As more people are using it, means they're appreciating something in it. It could come from so many different angles, but the sum total of all such appreciations gives it value, which we can measure in our own currencies like US dollar stuff. So if you look at studies, Bitcoin increases about 200% a year. So if you have 100 francs or $1 in Bitcoin, let's say in January, by next year, that one will be at least $2. You see, so, but it's not just for you, it's for everybody.
Right.
Because there is no central authority controlling it that could like shave a bit of the value from here and there. You know what those people do, right? Those people.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So pretty much if A gets rich through Bitcoin, Z gets rich through Bitcoin.
Exactly. Yes. Yep. Because Bitcoin is Bitcoin. Yeah.
Gotcha. I read somewhere that study Bitcoin as much as you can now. Mm-hmm. Your future self will be grateful. Why is that?
Again, let me use an analogy. In let's say 2001,
mm-hmm.
or 2000, would you have imagined that you work from home?
Nope.
Would you have imagined that you watch movies on the internet?
Well, maybe me. I would have. Yeah.
Yeah, but as it is today, because before we had like Hotbox. I mean, 2000, like yeah. When we're around, let's say age group 10, 11, things
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. We're using cassette tapes. We're using CDs. If you had a CD, you were like high class. See what I mean? Yeah. It was hard to imagine that would digitize so many aspects of our lives. And our parents were already telling us that computing is the future. So some of us, we started getting interested in it, maybe even in gaming and things like that, right? So similarly with Bitcoin, you can also think of it as the internet, because it's also a network. But it's the internet where security is default. On the internet, security is not default. They have given you the ability to network. They've given you the ability to exchange information, but you have to secure it yourself. So that's why, like, for you to secure your assets on Facebook, Facebook gives you security through login and things like that, right? But with Bitcoin, security is default. So once you create a Bitcoin, let's say wallet, you providing a password to it that it will be using to generate your addresses to secure the system is default. You don't pay extra for that. You don't spend any. It's just normal with it. So which means that in future, you start seeing so many applications of it. Let me give you an example. In companies, you always have trainings and they'll force you to change your password. You have experienced that, right? Like a couple of
months. Every 90 days, yep.
Yeah, security trainings. So that's because the security space or companies lose billions of dollars each year on like hacks, phishing scams, phishing attacks and things like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a system where security is default and then there is no central authority controlling it, that solves what they call the honeypot problem. Because if you have like a central location controlling something, some people can just focus on destroying that central thing and then bring down the system.
Right.
The Bitcoin is decentralized. So there's no one place for you to go attack it. So now if companies start implementing systems on top of Bitcoin in a way that each employee has like their own private keys, that whatever they want to do on the system, they need to like approve it. Just like you approve a Bitcoin transaction, It means that the company now, the printer, like want to access the printer, but I need to like present a signature that shows that I have authority. You can build those cryptography. So if you do that, you start seeing that people normally would connect to a printer in a company and then look for the closest computer connected to that printer and then check open files in it. And that's how they start hacking the system.
Right.
But if you have a system now that is built on like this kind of cryptographic proof-based mechanisms, then you have to prove that you have some secret key, or if you as a stranger, it would be like very hard to have it. So that's just one application. When you start seeing such, you see that when you have knowledge of that, you that familiarity at least gives you like a head start. Same as if you bring a kid from a less developed country who is not exposed to computing, even like in typing, some kid in the Western world who has been typing since they were 5 will have an advantage.
Yeah.
Yes. So yeah, so you can summarize that as if you understand this technology, you have a head start.
The struggles of, you know, typing, looking at a keyboard versus typing not on the keyboard.
You see things like that.
Yeah. How can Africa benefit from Bitcoin, in your opinion?
A lot of it. First of all, Bitcoin banks the unbanked. Because again, all you need is like a Bitcoin software and the internet. So now we have internet services even in our villages, but we may not have banks in those villages. So if you have people in the village who like have Bitcoin and they know how to use it, then you see they already have banks, right? And then if you start thinking of the systems one could build on top of it, then it's just amazing for Africa, because things like Jangi. Again, let me give you like one scenario. The way Bitcoin works is you have a private key, which is like a password. And then anything that you need is generated from that password. So let's say if you need an address to send money cryptographically, it slices a part of that password and then generates like a word that is all like encoded in funny way. That just like a Bitcoin addresses, you see what I mean? But the system is in a way that you can verify that this address came from someone that has the key, even without you knowing the actual password. I don't know if you see what I mean.
Yep.
So for example, if I generate an address and give you, I could generate a signature that will show that the signature is related to that address, and the person that has the private key is the person who generated those. So that's the main thing about Bitcoin. It uses proofs. So now, on top of that, a password then, or that private key, must not belong to one person. So if you watch like these movies, let's say American movies, where they always talk of Russia, then they want to send a missile, launch a missile, then you'd have the president, the vice president, or secretary of defense. They have to pin some key at the same time.
Yep.
So you see that a private key or password could be made of 3 pieces or even 10 pieces. So now imagine things like Jangi, where like we could have a wallet where all of us have keys to it. So all the members need to sign before money leaves. You see what I mean? Because now you have in Jangi with central authority, the president disappears. Something happens, right? There'll be cryptography, Bitcoin. You could have a system where maybe 4 people need to sign before money leaves. You see? So I just use that example to show you, like, even in terms of administration, how like joint, how do they call this, authority can be used to like prevent the lots of the problems that arise from the centralization. Another way is remittance. That because we have lots of Africans in the diaspora, who send money back, and the charges are outrageous. You pay 30% and things like that. Added to that, security is low. Remember, like, especially back in the day, you go to Western Union, there will always be thieves around there waiting and like aggressing people, stealing their money and things. But with Bitcoin, if you send someone money, it goes to their wallet. They don't even need to leave where they are, you see. And then the fees are like very low. The fees are based on the size of the transaction as opposed to the amount. So all transactions are measured in like megabytes, right? Like in the computer. So if, let's say I'm sending you money, and even if it's 10 million, but if it's 1 megabyte, if that 10 million in transactions is encoded in 1 megabyte, I'm going to pay just for using 1 megabyte worth of resources and stuff on the network. So it's like very cheap. And if you want like reference to such, check out El Salvador. They approved Bitcoin as a legal tender. And within the first week, even like West Senior was already losing millions.
West Senior was what?
West Senior was already losing millions.
Oh, man.
You have many of them across the world sending money every day. Right. Yeah, but the government kind of built a system where they have 2 legal tender. They have US dollars and Bitcoin. So the government has a wallet actually that I could pay you in Bitcoin, receive it as US dollar or in Bitcoin. You can choose. I can choose what I want to pay you in. You can choose how you want to receive it.
Right.
So even those in America with their IDs and the rest, they have that wallet. They just send people money back home. They didn't need So imagine that for Africa, you see. And I could give you so many uses. So another one is verification, land titles, certificates. You could use those and like encrypt them on the Bitcoin network, and using the technology I told you of like proof, where you just need to prove that you have the private keys that control this. So the governments could build systems where for land titles, all these assets, just digitize it, passports. And if you have access to like your private keys, then you can get to the airport and you could just sign, provide like a signature, and they would compare it with the one that is used to encrypt it, maybe a GCE certificate, and that's all verified that it's you. You don't need to worry about carrying things around. Yeah, there are just so many things about that.
Yeah.
People
want to know more, man. They need to come sign up for the class and learn how, you know, Bitcoin or however that term goes. But why should people or anyone, you know, the listeners and watchers right now, why should they, you know, study Bitcoin, or why should they come join you in one of your sessions? You know, how much is a session? How long is it at that? Why should they join you and, you know, either learn this for their own financial gain or for just information purposes?
Thanks for the question. And the means to like expose this hustle. Thanks a lot. It's subject to change. This first session is $500 for like maybe Americans and stuff like that. Like if you're in America, right? But in Cameroon, it's expressed to like 210,000. That's because like 21 is very important in Bitcoin. There's only going to be 21 million Bitcoin. So the fee is like 210,000, but you get 100,000 francs back as Bitcoin. So that would be your first Bitcoin, so you can learn how to manage it. The first week, you'll be looking at it like every minute. Oh, it's gone up. Oh, it's gone down. Oh, it's gone up. It's gone down, until you become used to it. And that's one thing I forgot to say. I think Bitcoin also helped me with a bit of anxiety. Like when I started using it, I was looking at it every second. You see, has it gone up? I don't know if you had that experience with your first Bitcoin. I'm looking at it every second. It's gone up. It's gone down. And then you realize that you just mature on it. You don't care about the price. And I mean, in my experience, and eventually that happens in so many things, that when it comes to like money, then I have some kind of bravery that I didn't have before.
Right.
But anyway, the student will get back 100,000 francs worth of Bitcoin. And in that process, as you're learning about wallets, how to use it, you're actually using that Bitcoin. So in for those in America, $500, you get about $200 back in Bitcoin. And then I think the last part of your question, like about the knowledge, for the students, as they are learning to, they start seeing how it relates to many other aspects in their lives. If you're interested in politics, you start understanding the values of decentralization as opposed to centralization and things like that. It's a broad field. You know, money is like the sea, is at the lowest level. Everything flows into it. So if you start understanding like money, you start seeing that you're moving to almost every aspect of the world.
Wonderful. And if nothing else, right, what is one takeaway that the listeners or the watchers, you know, should take this episode?
Yeah, I think one takeaway, you yourself had spelt it, that learn Bitcoin, your future self will be grateful. So I think that's one thing. Yeah, that we take out of this. You yourself had maybe felt that already.
Yeah, so man, I appreciate your time, man. How can people, you know, follow you, get in contact with you, and what advice do you have for those listening, watching, other than, you know, Bitcoin and stuff?
Yeah, I am on Twitter, Ebmesem, Ebmesem, at Ebmesem. That's my Twitter. I'm on Facebook too, Kobe Bryant Facebook. I think those are the two main means for now. And you too, right? Like, you are like this guru. So for those listening, this is my teacher. Like, he taught me a lot about, and he teaches me a lot about media and podcasting and stuff like that. So I guess through you too. So it's a network, right? We can always get.
Yeah. So you had the man. Appreciate you, Brian, you know, for joining on here, start chatting about Bitcoin. This is the first of many different conversations we'll have on many different technologies, but it's not the least of it on Bitcoin, right? Y'all going to hear from us again about Bitcoin. As questions come in, you know, comments, concerns, and stuff like that, we might probably, you know, sit on here and also channel them, you know what I mean? Again, this is SITM Podcast. We're on all social platforms and streaming platforms at SITM Podcast. Go follow us and hit that subscribe button for weekly notifications. Hopefully, you know, we'll do this on a weekly basis at that. I'm your host, Uncle AK, again, and we'll catch you in the next one. Peace.
It's Fizzy Bit.